I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungine, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, June the 3rd, episode 89 of Pandemic. Where did the virus SARS-CoV-2 come from? Did it jump from bats to humans? Did it transfer via another species? Where did it start? These are just some of the fundamental questions that are still being asked. Another is, did it start in a lab? The World Health Organization has warned for years that a leak from a lab might be the source of a pandemic at some point. But in the case of this pandemic, that's not the WHO's favoured theory. At least not so far. And that's after sending a team to the Wuhan Institute of Virology to interview lab staff. But last week, US President Joe Biden said elements of the American intelligence community were inclined towards the view that a lab leak, specifically a leak from the Institute of Virology in Wuhan in China, may indeed be the source of the global outbreak. Now, why are they saying that? And why is Joe Biden saying that publicly now? Well, this week we're going to put all that to Shane Harris, who covers intelligence and national security for the Washington Post, as well as hosting a podcast called Rational Security. He's up next. Okay, Shane, you are covering national security and intelligence for the Washington Post. First of all, thanks very much for talking to us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Once upon a time, the lab leak theory was regarded just as a bit of a conspiracy theory, but it's gained legs. So I suppose let's get down to basics. What's the lab leak theory?
Well, the lab leak theory is an idea that the COVID pandemic began not through natural transmission from an animal to a human, but rather that the virus existed previously in some form inside a laboratory. In particular, the laboratory under suspicion is called the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And the theory is that this virus got out from the lab, from this contained secure lab, either by infecting perhaps a person who worked in the lab, who then went out of the lab and transmitted it to other people, or perhaps it was contained in an animal and then that animal escaped or maybe was sold and then transmitted it to a person that way. But the idea is that it was in the lab. We can talk about why it was in the lab in the first place, according to the theory, but that's the notion, that it started in a lab and it got out from that lab.
Right. And as you say, not just any lab, it's the Institute of Virology looks specifically at bat coronaviruses. So it's a bit like looking around the village near Castle Dracula and saying, I wonder where these bite marks came from, if you believe the theory.
That's right. That's right. And the people in the U.S. government, and particularly in the Trump administration, who were kind of hot on this theory and were taking it very seriously, one of the first points of evidence that they looked to was the fact that the outbreak, which is believed to have begun in the city of Wuhan, this large city in China, is home to this very prominent lab, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which is world renowned for doing research on coronaviruses.
Right. Now, there was a call for an investigation into it. There's been an immense kind of amount of politics around investigations. Australia's got itself in hot water with China for calling for an independent investigation. But the World Health Organization sent people to Wuhan. They had to quarantine for 2 weeks. They got to speak to people. It wasn't an exercise in swabbing the labs and doing their own forensic examination. But what did they find when they went there?
Well, what they found, and you're right to point out that their research was limited, and I'll come back to that in a second, why that's important. They ultimately determined, this team, that the lab leak was the least likely of the scenarios for how the COVID-19 pandemic began. They actually rated natural transmission as the more highly and more likely scenario. But there was real problems with this investigation. Even the head of the WHO himself has noted that the Chinese government was not completely forthcoming. As you said, the team was not really there doing biological samples. They were more interviewing and talking to people that the lab was willing to put forward. Now, they do say that they felt that they put all those difficult questions on the table about, you know, could it have come from the lab? Were any of your workers sick? And ultimately were satisfied that it couldn't have come from the lab. But it wasn't what we would call a forensic evaluation. And I think even the WHO team would acknowledge that. And notably, the Biden administration came out publicly, the White House, and said that it didn't really have high confidence in this WHO-led investigation, precisely because the Chinese government has been withholding information and not granting the kind of full access that you would want to do a really thorough inquiry.
Right. And you actually tweeted a very helpful link to three members of this WHO team who did an interview with a podcast on virology. And they said that, you know, there had been some people who worked in the lab that they weren't able to speak to. And the reason they couldn't speak to them was they had transferred to other parts of the country and that. And they had to be satisfied with that for an answer. So there are reasons, I suppose, people would look at that and say, well, we're not getting all the answers we want.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the team that went there and that spoke on that podcast, that the This Week in Virology podcast, their attitude was, look, you know, they feel that there are lots of scientific reasons why the natural occurrence is the more likely scenario. But they kind of, you know, said we were only able to do what we were allowed to do. I mean, this isn't a team that had a kind of a mandate to go in and open up the cupboards and look through all the test tubes. And they had to basically take the lab at their word. And they also feel that the lab staff is quite credible and is heavily credentialed as it is. And I think that they're inclined to say, look, we talked to these people as scientists talking to scientists. That's the way that we're relating to them. And I think there's a lot of, you know, validity, obviously, in what they learned. But even I think, you know, when the WHO director comes out and says, look, this isn't really a team that was designed to go in and do the kind of, you know, forensic investigation that you might expect, I think that points to what even the WHO would acknowledge were the limits of that inquiry.
Right. And they also believe, and I think possibly even intelligence people that you've spoken to believe there are limits to a further intelligence look with a 90-day deadline being put on it. But let's look at the intelligence end of things first and foremost. How has this come up now, and what have the Biden administration expressed concerns about in terms of concerns coming from the intelligence community insofar as that's in any way a monolithic entity?
So the president has announced, President Biden, that there is going to be this 90-day review of intelligence to see whether or not the U.S. can learn more about the lab leak. What happened is when he came into office, I think there was already sort of this lingering anxiety about the lab leak theory, partly because there was there's a question of was it legitimate, but B, the Trump administration and President Trump particularly had pursued this with really kind of a tendentious sort of attitude. You know, President Trump had talked a lot about the lab. He talked about the China virus. He called it the Kung Flu. And there was this sense that I think that the Trump administration was pointing a finger at the Wuhan lab because it deflected attention from the Trump administration's own deficiencies and bungled response to the pandemic. So there was some political sensitivity around that, to be sure, when President Biden comes in. But as we understand it, he told his intelligence agencies, look, tell me everything that you know on this question. What do we actually have in our intelligence files? What kind of reporting do we have? He got a report back to him in May. And by all accounts, the conclusion was there's more to look at here. There's more that we could examine. He was told that there was actually a large amount of intelligence that had not yet been examined that might bear on this question of the lab leak. And so he essentially said, all right, this is kind of a to be determined. There's a question mark on this. Go back, do a 90-day review, see what more you can find. And importantly, that could also entail trying to collect new intelligence. So, you know, do we task human agents that we might have someplace to see what they can learn? Do we try and intercept communications among Chinese officials? I think that's all basically on the table right now. Whether you can get that answered in 90 days, wow, that seems like a stretch, particularly considering there was no smoking gun that was revealed in the Trump administration when they were deeply digging into this question.
Right. Now, is opinion divided in the intelligence community? Because there's, 18 branches of the US intelligence apparatus, and is it about three of them who favor the theory that it could have come from here and the rest either don't think so or aren't sure?
So there is some division, and President Biden spoke to this in what was a really extraordinary statement. Very unusual for a sitting president to come out and sort of say in the midst of things, all right, this group leans this way, this group leans another. What he said was that two element, as he put it, and I think we can understand that to mean two intelligence agencies, and you're quite right, there's about a dozen and a half of these that make up the community. Two of them leaned more towards the idea that it was natural occurrence, and one of them leaned a bit more towards the lab leak theory, but all three of those had what he called low to moderate confidence in their assessment, which is kind of intelligence speak for saying it's a bit of a shrug here, like we wouldn't bet the mortgage on one of these theories. But the fact that there was sort of leaning one way or the other told you that there was some maybe analytic disagreement. It's hard to know how profound that disagreement actually is. I've talked to some sources from the previous administration who said, yeah, I wouldn't go too far as to say like there was this grand debate where one agency definitely thought it was the lab and some others thought that it wasn't. But what this tells you is that at least the intelligence itself doesn't provide a conclusive answer. It can't definitively say, yes, it came from a lab, or no, it didn't come from a lab. And that's where I think where you have that kind of that gap in the analysis is probably a place that officials now will be looking and saying, all right, well, what is the issue here that's at dispute? Can we find more information that will kind of close that gap and give us more certainty about the likely answer?
Right. I suppose the thing that they would like to firm up most would be, did lab workers get sick with a COVID-like illness? And where they sent home from the lab and in theory possibly spread it into the community. But did they fall sick in the first place with symptoms close to in what we now know as COVID?
Yeah, I think that's a big question to answer. And there is intelligence reporting, which had been publicly revealed back in the closing days of the Trump administration, that there were some workers at the lab who did fall ill with COVID-like symptoms, also described as symptoms that mimicked that looked like seasonal illness. So they could have just had flu, or they could have had something like the common cold. Trying to understand, though, whether those individuals, if we actually know who they are, had antibodies, for instance, for COVID-19, would go a long way to saying, okay, can we not just maybe isolate sick workers in the lab, which again doesn't prove that it got sick from the lab, they could have gotten sick outside the lab, but might that also help back up the timeline of infection? Because the understanding is that these individuals got sick in November of 2019. That would be earlier than the first confirmed known cases of COVID-19. So even if they didn't get it in the lab, the fact that you would then see infected people prior to the first known infections would be pretty instructive in terms of trying to determine when the disease first emerged.
Right. I mean, some of the suspicion must have been in response to China's response. I think the scientists that went there from the WHO said, look, the reason they didn't address every theory that came up was they didn't want to sort of dignify them with comment, or they didn't want to give them the oxygen of publicity. But China's attitude has, I suppose, been less than transparent. And that's at least something that has given cause for suspicion.
Most definitely. I mean, by any objective measure, you know, China is not being entirely forthcoming about this. And I've talked to people who from the Trump administration who said, you know, we've worked with the Chinese on other disease outbreaks, and they were more forthcoming, for instance, in the 2002 SARS outbreak. So there was this notable kind of, attitude of obfuscation. Some people would even describe it as a cover up by the Chinese that did fuel this suspicion. And I think, you know, and again, to go back to the President Trump and the rhetoric that he used when he started talking about the lab leak and kind of almost using this as a rhetorical weapon to blame the Chinese, that then had this kind of opposite effect of maybe even like encouraging some scientists to more kind of rush to the defense of their Chinese counterparts because they felt that they were being attacked politically by the president. So this whole thing got tied up in politics from the beginning, but it is definitely the case that the Chinese government is not forthcoming. Even the Biden administration has said that. So you really have a kind of a bipartisan agreement, it seems to me, across two administrations that the Chinese have not, you know, fully opened the books and subjected themselves to a real inspection for a virus that, you know, most scientists do agree emanated from China.
How usual is it for intelligence to be ventilated this publicly? I think the State Department put together a fact sheet that came out in January, and, you know, Joe Biden providing commentary on some of the intelligence agencies leaning towards a particular theory. I mean, in your experience, which is some years covering this beat, how usual is that?
It's quite unusual. You don't normally see analysis being aired to this degree and so prominently when it's sort of, you know, half cooked, if you will. I don't mean to say that there's something faulty in the analysis, but like the question still hasn't been answered. This is still a work in progress. So to see the State Department, as they did in January of 2021, the last years of the Trump administration or President Biden now, coming out and revealing this information when by all accounts, we don't have the full picture, that is quite unusual. And, you know, it also speaks to something, you know, I think probably for Trump and for Biden, of this desire to go ahead and do this to try and, you know, in Trump's case, I think try and, you know, put maybe a bit of a spin on the idea that it came from the lab, and in President Biden's case, to try and sort of like get control of some of this controversy that is brewing. So, you know, when you come out and you say, okay, look, here's what the, you know, the vaunted intelligence community knows, it kind of adds like an air of authority to it. At the same time, like the intelligence community hasn't determined what the answer is. So it's also strange to see people coming out and talking about intelligence that doesn't actually point towards a conclusion. Usually when the government kind of, you know, deploys that sort of classified information, it's to try and get you to believe that we know what the answer to something is, you know, and that's clearly not the case here.
You could detect in the virology podcast a bit of annoyance on the part of the WHO team that went in. I mean, as you say, when an intelligence community says something or the president talks about an intelligence briefing he's had, it gives it a certain imprimatur or a certain weight. But the WHO team are saying, well, look, we're dealing with these things that are now, quote, based on intelligence, and we're not getting that intelligence. So while some of it, the kind of the thrust of it has been aired publicly, we're not being given specifics to follow up on.
That's exactly right. I mean, and I think that their frustration is understandable, and frankly, it's well founded. I mean, you're talking about classified information. The intelligence committee agencies do not reveal their sources and their methods, famously, and so it's a little bit of a, well, just trust us. And it's, you know, it's very hard to do, not only when you have, you know, a previous administration that was so heavily politicizing the issue of the virus in so many ways, but, you know, famously, intelligence agencies have gotten things wrong. I mean, we can draw the obvious comparison to the hunt for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq in 2002 and 2003 that preceded the U.S. invasion there, where intelligence agencies were, you know, coming out and saying, well, you know, we know that they have weapons. And of course, Colin Powell, we all remember, gave this famous presentation at the UN where he even started to reveal some of these sources. They got it wrong. And so, you know, it's I understand completely the instinct of scientists to say, look, we deal in the world of data that we can see and things that we can prove, and not in the realm of, you know, suggestion and innuendo. And to be clear, the intelligence so far on the lab leak, it's all circumstantial. There's no scientific or, you know, or physiological or forensic evidence that points to a leak from that lab. It is all at this point kind of, you know, trying to connect dots and trying to determine whether this theory, you know, has legs. And the scientists look at that and say, until you can show us some real proof, you're not really giving us anything to base this idea on.
Right. Well, I suppose finally, one of the things that everybody does seem to be united on is that while this is a theory that merits further investigation, and there were scientists who wrote to Science magazine who want that, and even the WHO team aren't averse to it as long as they get the right information and the intelligence communities will pursue it, there is a desire on the part of everyone to get to the root of where the virus actually came from, and for that to be a definitive and scientific process.
Yes, absolutely. And the reason that that is such a crucial question, of course, is because we need to understand, could something like this happen again? I mean, if there is a reservoir or a set of host animals out there that has this virus, we need to know that so perhaps they can be contained or eliminated. If it came from a lab that was doing dangerous research, obviously the world needs to know that too, to understand if the lab needs to be closed or measures need to be taken to not let this occur a second time. So, you know, when we talk about trying to find the origins of COVID, it's less, I think, about assessing blame on a country and more understanding, you know, how did this, you know, worse than a century pandemic that has killed so many people, how did it happen so that we can ensure it doesn't happen again? That's really should be, I think, the point of this inquiry.
And finally then, Shane, I take it I saw pictures from on social media. You were out in a restaurant recently.
Yes.
Are you vaccinated? Does this make your life easier? Or in the world you work in, have you been socially distancing for many years, sitting on opposite ends of a park bench from mysterious sources?
Right, yeah, right, quite right. Social distancing is something I guess we practice in my line of work. No, I am fully vaccinated and happy to be so. And I'm thrilled to be able to actually do things that I love in Washington and seeing the city come back to life. So the months of, we didn't have as severe a lockdown as some cities, but I was very strict in my interactions, and I'm glad now to be protected and able to go out and enjoy life again the way I used to.
All right. Well, thanks a million for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Oh, it was great to be with you. Thanks so much.
And that's all for this week. If you want to go to www.rte.ie/news/pandemic, I'll post a link to the This Week in Virology podcast Shane Harris and I discussed during our conversation. And if you tune in at about 50 minutes in, you'll hear the discussion about the Wuhan lab visit by the World Health Organization team from three members of that team itself. So if you have any feedback or comments on this podcast, do get in touch. I'm on colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie or on Twitter @ColumOmongain. We're back next week with more. Until then, stay safe, take care, and thanks as always for listening.